Good evening and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. Today, we've got two guests. Our first guest is Salihu Dasuki Nakande. Salihu is a university lecturer and member of the All Progressives Congress, the APC. Our second guest is Eloka. Eloka is a trade finance professional and a supporter of the candidate of the Labour Party, Peter Obi. They call themselves the Obedients. Now, today we're going to be discussing three topics. The first is the release of an affidavit with regards to Bola Ahmed Tinubu. The courts in the United States sometime in the 1990s seized a few hundreds of thousands of dollars from his bank accounts, and it's been alleged that those sums were linked to money laundering and drug trafficking. So that's the first news item we'll discuss. Secondly, we'll discuss the town hall that took place last week. It was labeled the presidential town hall, but not all the presidential candidates attended. So we'll discuss that, as well as the who we think performed the best. And finally, we'll discuss the trip by Peter Obi to Edo State. That seemed to generate a lot of conversation on social media. So we'll discuss the implications of his visit to Edo State. So to our first topic, Phoenix, this affidavit, I don't understand why it's generated a lot of conversation. This same story had been published many, many years before that money was seized from Bola Tinubu's account. So why is this suddenly at the forefront of Nigerians' minds? Phoenix, can you talk us through this?
Hi, Michael. And hi, Eloka and Salihu. Thanks for joining us this week. Hello, listeners. You're absolutely right. I mean, this is not new news, right? But it's always had a toga of mystique, in the sense that, you know, people talked about it was common knowledge, and we've seen a number of articles. I remember David Ondeyin wrote about this maybe a couple of months ago. But I think why it's top of mind now is obviously the release of court-certified documents, providing a veritable paper trail that shows exactly what happened, the context around the forfeiture, the parties that were there, and incontrovertible evidence that Tinubu was front and center in this. He was a defendant, and I mean, and that the US government clearly took hold of. It therefore enables. Can you hear me?
Sorry, you cut out a bit just as you were talking. So do you mind rewinding a bit and then carrying on?
Okay, I'm not sure where I cut out. Let me just say, I mean, I think the reason why, and I'm hoping you can hear me now, the reason why it's, top of mind for everyone is because there's now clear evidence in the form of documents, court-certified documents, that show exactly what happened, the issues that went before the court, the affidavits that were sworn, the parties to the activity from the IRS, from the U.S. Attorney's Office, the district court, and, you know, a whole end-to-end clear and incontrovertible evidence that showed that funds were actually forfeited from his bank accounts, that showed the how in the beginning they had reached out to him and there were inconsistencies in his message, that show a clear link between Bola Tinubu and persons who had been named as being part of the white heroin trade in the Chicago, Illinois area, and obviously in Indiana as well. So I mean, and there was clear evidence showing that he had received funds from this Moise Akande person, had paid it into his account, that there was a strong relationship. They were using the same address. You know, so this is helping people, you know. I mean, unless you want to be willfully blind, how do you argue against clear court-certified documents that show exactly how $1.4 million was seized? And then, of course, they came to a compromise, and he had to forfeit $460,000. Raising so many questions. I mean, how did he come about this money? What business was he doing? At that time, he was an employee of Mobile, and with a stated salary of about $2,400 a month, how do you amass funds in excess of $2 million, you know? And so, you know, it just, you know, casts there's always been a shadow. Those who are willing to, you know, speak the truth have always known that, I mean, Bola Tinubu is a shady character with a lot of corruption baggage. This just provides strong evidence as to what happened in the U.S. I think the question is when I read through the whole documents, I think what was clear was that there wasn't sufficient evidence to pin him. In my mind, there wasn't sufficient evidence to pin him, or he was able to strike a deal, because one would expect that they would have gone after him, as a member. Looking at the fact that this was about drugs, but for some reason they could only focus on the funds, and therefore they forced that forfeiture. But what is clear is that you don't forfeit your personal property to the government unless they have strong cause that this is these are proceeds of illegal activity. No court will sign off on something like that without strong evidence from the IRS, from the U.S. Attorney's office, showing that yes, we have been able to investigate. We have seen the links. We have seen the funds flow. This is how we're going to hold this guy, and this is how we're going to get these funds forfeited. And that's what happened at the end of the day.
Thank you for the explanation, Phoenix. One follow-up question I was just going to ask before I move to Salihu is: do you know why this affidavit was released? Did somebody apply to the court to get the documents, or did the authorities just release it of their own volition? Do you know?
No, I understand that some social rights or NGO type person, or lawyer, actually applied for it and went through the entire process to get this provided by the courts in the U.S. Just like we said, we had Jonathan sign into law the Freedom of Information Act. The same thing applies in the U.S. So you can apply as long as you go through the right process and you show reasonable cause for that document to be released and pay the fees that are required, the courts will release it. I think court records are public information. It's only in cases where the records are sealed. Let's say maybe it involves a minor or a national security issue. Beyond that, you can typically get, you know, any court record once you go through the process and pay the fees that are required. And I think that's what this person did.
Thank you, Phoenix. Let me go to Dasuki. Salihu Dasuki Nakande, I'm sure you saw the news reports of Tinubu having to forfeit about $400,000 because those sums were traced to money laundering and drug trafficking. But yet, that's the candidate of your party, and I presume you're still supporting him. So are you saying the forfeiture to the US government has not changed your stance, Salihu?
No, it hasn't, Michael. Michael, there is no reason why it should be. We've all seen the way the affidavit came out. We've also seen documents that have come out where the same U.S. government has said that he has no case to answer. It's there. He has no case to answer. He's free. He's a free man. He's not a convict. So I don't understand the whole brouhaha around all this discussion. And I'm sure every legal practitioner knows that reading through that document has shown more evidence again that he has no case to answer. So that's why the party feels he has no case to answer and he should run for election for the president of the country.
But so you're not disturbed? Because a number of commentators have said, look, you don't walk away from $400,000 unless the money wasn't clean. So are you saying Bola Tinubu was happy to walk away from $400,000?
Absolutely.
That clearly were traced to drugs? Are you saying those sums were not drug-related sums? Is that what you're saying?
Michael, I'm sure, I'm not sure where you're getting your whole narrative that there were evidence that it was traced to drugs. If you tell me there were assumptions, then that makes sense.
But yeah, no, Salim, there was no assumption. We have certified court documents that say this was a drug-related seizure forfeiture. It's there, in black and white, stamped by court in the US. So this is not subject for conjecture.
Oh, it is, Phoenix. It is Phoenix.
How can it be subject to conjecture?
Because, Phoenix, you see, even though I'm a university lecturer, I think I have sat down with three people that are lawyers just for them to actually explain it to me so that I don't go in and say what I don't know.
Okay.
But these were based, yes. And then from the explanation I got, if there were evidences that it was genuinely linked to drugs, as you said, then definitely they would have convicted him.
Convicted him how? In absentia? He wasn't in the US at the time. He was named a defendant in the document. The document clearly says that it's a drug-related forfeiture. What else do you want the document to say to prove it? How do you convict somebody? I mean, how do you convict in an absentia? They went after what they could get, which was his property. If you can't find, he became a fugitive, basically.
Nope. Phoenix is not a fugitive. He has gone to America several times since.
Yes, yes.
So how is he a fugitive if he was...
No. Let's not confuse the timeline. We're talking about a case that happened in 1993. So between 92 and 93. So in 93 was when they settled the case for 400, because they first seized his property in excess of about $1.4 million. And then they reached a compromise where he gave up $460,000. So yes, that's why they can then say he has no case to answer subsequently.
All right.
But it was clear that he had committed, that he had funds that were linked to drugs, and there was a drug-related forfeiture.
Phoenix, so that I don't go back to back with you, so that the other speaker can speak. But I just want to ask you one question. If you agree with what you're saying, can this case be revisited or not?
Can it be revisited?
Yes.
If there's new evidence, of course it can be revisited.
So then why have people not gone to revisit this case again?
Who is supposed to revisit it?
People like you
I'm not a U.S. law enforcement agent.
Okay.
It's only U.S. law enforcement agents.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Can we, Sally, I just have one more question for you before I go to Aluka. Festus Keyamo, who's the spokesperson for your party's presidential campaign, made an interesting argument because he was asked, and that's the question I'm asking you.
Yeah.
The individuals who the court says were drug dealers happened to share the same address with Tinubu. They were on the boards of companies that he was on the board of. It was clear that he signed some documents and even admitted to the investigators that he knew them, but he later backtracked and claimed he didn't know. Festus Keyamo was asked about these things, and Keyamo said they just happened to be his flatmates, and that there's no real relationship with those people. But so I just want to understand, is that your view as well, that Bola Tinubu did not know these people, but somehow they're on the board of a company together, they signed documents for him, but somehow they don't know them? Is that what you think too?
Yes, it has happened in several business environments. Yes, you have people that come into your board without you genuinely knowing them. Yes, but because they bring one form of expertise or the other. So it happens. It happens. And then let me even bring back to this whole matter of transfer. And I don't know about Phoenix, but I'm sure you are aware also that, especially with the areas of changing Forex, for example, in the UK, where sometimes you have a particular amount of money and you want to change Forex, and then you share it out, maybe, for example, in a student platform, and you get different people making transfers to you. And then what happens to those transfers? Sometimes can we even confirm the nature of these transfers? But that's even not the argument. But I can argue it from that perspective where Michael has said, you can be on the board of a company without genuinely knowing who the owner of the company is. Yeah, it worked. Yeah.
Sure. Thank you, Sadio. Let me go to Eluka. Eluka, you've heard what Phoenix and Salihu have said. So I just want to get your thoughts. Do you think the APC and Bola Tinubu are making a persuasive case to ordinary Nigerians about these sums that were seized from his account? Eluka?
Thank you very much, Nigeria's Best, for having me once again. Hi, Phoenix. Hi, Salisu. So to be very honest, I'm not sure the APC is making a case to anyone. I think the APC, to a large extent, they don't think this is a case that needs to be made. You know, and they are basking in the forgetfulness of Nigerians. So, I mean, normally it should have been a topical issue, frontline issue across the country, you know, because it speaks to the character of the person that is contested to become president of this country under the banner of the APC. You know, when you talk of forfeiture, it means that there was an investigation, and so you cannot separate a crime from a forfeiture, from the amount that was forfeiture, that was taken by the federal government, forfeited rather. So I mean, when I see the conversations across various channels, man, news media, and in fact, the Nigerian news media is not even reporting it. I guess that APC has done what they are famous for, which is killing topical issues. So there's no case Nigerians are making. What I see really is that we've gone back to the, you know, there was someone that said, even if Buhari arrested my parents, I'll still support them. So this is thing we are seeing now where, in spite of all the evidence we have, people are still arguing that there's no evidence. You know, it wasn't a crime, or it doesn't matter. I mean, it's less for Nigerians. You know, if Nigerians feel that having a drug peddler or a money launderer as president of their country is fine by them, I mean, that decision is across the country. There's nothing really I can do. The evidence is there for everyone to see. You know, does APC care about the evidence? They don't care. For them, it's all about winning elections. They don't mind. They don't mind the historical past of the person running on their flag. So I'm not sure they're making a case. I mean, the opposition party, the PDP, is also not making enough case. You know, what you've seen is supporters of PTOB trying to drive the narrative around this with these certified true copies and saying that for us to break away from our past, we need to ensure that people we elect to office are people with character, strong character. And which is why people like us are standing behind Peter because of the character he has. I mean, I cannot, in all goodness, support.
Hello, Eluka, are you still there?
Someone like Bola Ahmed Tinubu, who we all know has this history and school he went to for future document. Again, I always say that in politics, we're always fooled by randomness. So, I mean, APC is fooling people by randomness. So they're not even making a case, and they're not trying to. Thank you.
Thank you, Eluka. I just want to ask you a final question on this issue. Is there a reason why? Because the speculation on social media is that based on the strength of the allegations and the fact that the courts said that he should forfeit the $400,000, there was the expectation that he should have been prosecuted. So do you know why he's not been prosecuted or not even been declared wanted? He still goes in and out of America. Do you know the reason why?
The only person that can, the only people that have the authority to answer this question will be the attorneys, prosecuting attorneys, on why they entered into the kind of agreement they entered into with Bola Ahmed Tinubu on why he wasn't prosecuted. You know, and I think maybe there was a case to be made saying, if we enter this agreement, you could lead us to bigger fishes. So why prosecute a small fish when you could actually use him as your ladder to get in the big fishes you want, you're targeting? So, I sense again that this is why he was not prosecuted, you know. And so for APC, it's well, I call it luck on their side, that even though he has it for future agreement with the United States government, we can't necessarily call him a convict because he wasn't prosecuted. So again, I don't know why they didn't prosecute him. I sense that there was a deal somewhere and saying, if you agree to forfeit this fund, we will not prosecute you. And Bola Ahmed Tinubu took the deal and moved on. And so again, I wish we could. I mean, it's even left for civil society in the year to go back and ask, why wasn't this man prosecuted? And if possible, if there was a deal agreement, was the deal subject to an NDA? Even if it was subject to an NDA, is there a term limit expired for the NDA? So this is what I expect the opposition party to do, and civil society. Thank you.
Thank you, Eluka. Hopefully the listeners at home will reach their own conclusions on that issue. But to our second topic, Phoenix, there was a presidential town hall debate amongst the presidential candidates. In attendance were Peter Obi, Kola Abiola. Atiku was not there, but was represented by his running mate, Governor Okoa. Bola Tinubu was absent and wasn't represented by anyone. So to you, Phoenix, first of all, in terms of the responses to the question, who do you think delivered the best performance? On social media, one group said it was Peter Obi, another group said Okoa delivered the best performance. Some even praised Kola Abiola. But who do you think did well and why, Phoenix?
It was interesting. I thought Kola Abiola did well. He held his own. And maybe it's this thing about low expectations. So when you don't expect much of people and you actually hear them speak, you then sort of like, you know, ascribe more to them than perhaps you should. But I thought he did well. I think if you ask me who did the best, I mean, I think Peter Obi came just ahead of Konkonso, who also had a good showing. And I remarked on that because, you see, for me, these debates are not about you trying to show off your oratory skills. It's about showing us your mental acuity, showing us that your principles, showing us that you own your plan. And therefore, if we ask you a question, you can explain to us, consistent with what you said before, and you can see that clearly. I mean, Peter Obi kept saying the same things he said, talked about the things that were in his plan. You heard also from Konkonso, which was good because it was also the first opportunity to see him in that sort of forum. And I mean, he also held his own. Nothing he said there would, of course, make me switch from who I've decided to support, because clearly he continues to show that he's the best candidate. But I thought those were the top two. Clearly, Peter Obi stood head and shoulders above all of them. Okoa, I mean, I can't blame PDP people for trying to talk up their guy. I don't know whether they had low expectations or somebody who's a two-term governor and who is a, if I remember correctly, who is a medical doctor by profession, so I expect him to be educated and be able to speak. But there was nothing he said. I mean, it was even, at one point I made a remark that there was no fact checking of anything that he said, because he said nothing memorable. I mean, the things that he tried to say were when he was trying to, you know, play the attack dog and go after a Peter Obi on saving, or go after, there was also one point that he went after something that Nkosi Ohlone just said to him, oh, let's not lie to Nigerians. So for me, and the fact that he's not the presidential candidate, really, I mean, I didn't take anything that he said at face value, because when you have those kinds of people, they come there and try to position themselves, but anything they say can be denied by the man at the top of the ticket. So, I mean, Okowa did what he thought he could do. He didn't impress me much, but the top two were clearly Peter Obi coming up Trump and Nkosi holding his own.
Thank you, Phoenix. Let me come to Salihu. Salihu, Bola Tinubu did not attend and he did not send a representative. Why did Bola not show up, Salihu? And secondly, is this acceptable that someone who's running for president of Nigeria does not feel the need to show up to debates? Salihu, is that do you consider that acceptable?
Absolutely, very, very acceptable. He shouldn't come for debate organized by that bias media art from Kokoda Rice. Absolutely, yeah.
Sorry, can you explain why do you believe they're biased? How, in what way have they displayed bias?
Why they've now shown evidence of such biases by publishing a fake news from INEC with regards to INEC investigating Bola Ahmed Tinubu. It's everywhere. There are media and staff such as the Lawbreaker that keeps attacking our candidate. So why go there and set him up for embarrassment? They set up the Labour Party candidate for embarrassment there. I'm sure you watched it. You saw the way supporters of PDP made Peter Obi very, very angry, where he couldn't maintain his school. And what has everyone now said? Oh, that Peter Obi doesn't know how to control his temper in a public domain. He can't control his temper across people that he wants to lead. So that's the way the media platform is. Is one of their chief presenter is a former deputy governor of the PDP, deputy governor aspirant of PDP. So what do you expect? Set up for a trap? Absolutely not. Not with Arise TV.
Oh, thank you, Salihu. So are you saying Bola Tinubu will attend future debates? Because because this is the second time. The first time he was invited to speak at the Nigerian Bar Association conference and he didn't show up. And that's when he sent his running mate, who was looking like Baron Greenback from Danger Mouse in his suit and trainers. And Bola Tinubu did not show up to that. So during the next debate, what if we hear another of these stories that he's not coming because somebody's biased? Is this a sustainable approach to politicking?
First of all, Phoenix, with regards to the Nigerian Bar Association, Michael, it wasn't a debate. It was one of their conferences where they invited presidential aspirants to come there. So it wasn't a debate. Moving forward, I know Kadria Ahmed is organizing an event. At least we know her to be a neutral journalist with a lot of integrity, and we believe Bola Ahmed Tinubu should be there. If he's not there, Kashim will be there.
But again, Kadaria is neutral.
Mr. Michael, you might want to tell Mr. Felix to stop interrupting me.
Yes, order, Phoenix. Please allow Salihu. Okay, carry on, Salihu.
Yeah, so that you see, has even made me lose my thoughts. This is what they do, these obedient supporters. You try to make an argument and then they interrupt you and you lose your thoughts. But yes, if Asiwaju doesn't even come for the media debate, I don't think it really matters. It's not mandatory. When they were doing the one in Arise TV, Asiwaju was in Mina. He was talking to farmers. He was trying to sell his manifesto to them. You understand that his manifesto is fluid and trying to see what the changes again, what the needs here that could be brought into the manifesto. So we're not even bothered about this debate. This debate is watched by less than 1% of the Nigerian population. The debate is not going to sell anything to us. Our manifesto is out there. It talks. We haven't seen the manifesto of Peter Obi. I remember when the manifesto came out, Phoenix and Lloyd were all discussing and they were so excited. In less than 30 minutes, their presidential candidate said that was a draft manifesto, blah, blah, blah. You see, the inconsistency in that part is just straightforward. It's straightforward. There's nothing to celebrate about the Labour Party. You saw the way they were trying to bring down that town hall meeting. There were actually videos out there, and their argument was, why should the vice presidential candidate of PDP be on the, be there to talk on behalf of Atiku? At least they can behave themselves. They had to ask the candidate in there, are those your fans? By a PDP commentator, that was, what was his name, the former media advisor to President Jonathan. Peter Obi said, no, they were not his supporters. You see, these are the kinds of people that we try to shield our presidential candidate from going to meet, people that lack integrity, people that he would not be able to sit down with on a normal day. And Peter Obi has learned, you know, he's a new politician in this game. What did Okupe say after some few weeks? That they wouldn't be attending any debate that other presidential candidates don't come. So they don't learn, but we're teaching them the game. The game is the game.
Thank you, Salihu. Let me go to Eluka. Eluka, you've heard what Salihu and Phoenix have said. I have two questions for you. First question is, of all the candidates that showed up, who do you think performed the best? And secondly, do you agree with Salihu that the game is the game, so you don't need to turn up to debates, Eluka?
I think for the debates, man, I think I was really, really impressed with the output of everyone, to be very honest. I think Kolabera did well. You know, he was able to communicate his plans well. You know, I think I was visibly impressed with RMK. I think he spoke well too. I mean, Obi Tobi, he's been consistent. You listen to his interviews from when he left government, what he says has been consistent. So, I mean, it's just the consistency for me, for P2B. Even to a larger extent, I mean, I think I was also impressed with the vice presidential candidate of the PDP, Dr. Ifeanyi Okowa's delivery too. I think there was a bit of, I mean, you couldn't fault some of his arguments, though, you know, it's always easier said than done. You know, so I mean, the three presidential candidates and the vice presidential candidate representing Atiku Abubakar of the PDP, I think they did very well. But on a balance of scale, I would say for consistency, I think Peter Obi did very well. I think that he's been able to, you know, pass his message in simple, non-flowery language. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I've done. This is how you do it. And that's why I think he's just head above shoulders when you look at other presidential candidates. And to your second question about the game is the game, I've repeatedly said it for the APC, they know where their target market is, or their target voters are, rather. And so when you drill down and say, okay, if you're a strategist for the APC, you ask yourself, who am I coming to speak to? So when you talk of debates, when you talk of all these big flowery language, economics in this, and economic indices, production to consumption, GDP, fiscal responsibility and irresponsibility, I am not sure the people that will be able to grasp this message are the target voters of the APC. So the APC is playing the game they understand how to play, which is, we're not interested in speaking big English. We're not interested in middle-class Nigerians because we know middle-class Nigerians will not vote. They will not vote. So our messaging is going to be targeted at rural, lower-class Nigerians. And to the largest things, I mean, they feel that if they target their messages to those voters, that is where their votes will come from. So they're not really bothered. You know, and so I don't expect anything different from them. I think this has been their strategy. Oh, well, I dare say that Bola Ahmed Tinubu will not be presenting himself for any debate because he doesn't have the capacity, you know, due to his mental and physical state to stand the rigors of 2 hours or 3 hours answering questions. He doesn't have that capacity at this present time. So what I know he has capacity for is making deals across the board, you know, meeting this strong man here, meeting this mobilizer there, bringing money, spending, you know, because he feels that as far as he gets people that can mobilize voters, because I mean, this election is going to be about who is able to mobilize their base to come out to vote. Anybody that's able to mobilize their base to come out to vote to win the election. And for a Bola Ahmed Tinubu, his base is not watching TV, listening to debates. That's not where his voting population or voting base is. His base are those guys that listen to say, okay, this is who we'll vote for, and they all go and vote. You know, so I mean, I agree with Salisu to a certain extent that the game is the game, and everybody's going to play the game to their best ability, and may the best gamer win the election. Thank you.
Thank you, Eluka. The final question I was going to ask you is, there was a slight debate on social media about one of the comments that Okowa made. I think Okowa said, you cannot start saving until you need to grow first before you start saving. And it generated a lot of debate on social media. And there were arguments back and forth about whether or not it was important to save. And I just want to check, where do you stand on this point?
I mean, the argument Okowa made was ironic because, I mean, if we all remember that his PDP government was, I mean, the Obasanjo government of 1999 to 2007 had a top, I mean, they created the excess code account because we needed to save, and that it is only with savings we can actually get the kind of funding or economic growth we need, kind of funding to push economic activities. And so, I mean, and that's the thing about the political season. You know, you see a lot of people twist their own philosophy. I mean, if someone was from the APC was saying that you don't need to save, I understand. I mean, they've always come in and say, we're going to be a spender. In fact, they want to delink revenue from spending. So those guys don't care about saving. But someone in the PDP saying you don't need to save or it's not important to save, it's ironic because that is what your party stood on. The Good Luck Ebele Jonathan insisted on savings. The Obasanjo government insisted on savings. It is the savings that they had in place that shielded us through the global financial crisis of 2008. Again, this is political season. And I when I see people make these arguments online, I get it's baffling, but again, it's political season because that means clearly as a party, you don't even know what your party stands for. So you support the party and you change your opinions like the weather. Your party's platform has always been, we are what? We'll be fiscally responsible. You know, again, I mean, it's political time. So you expect some absurd arguments from people across party lines. Thank you.
Thank you, Eluka. Now we need to move on to our final topic, which is Peter Obi's campaign visit to Edo State. So Phoenix, a few days ago, Peter Obi decided to stop over in Edo State, and to the shock and surprise of many on social media, a massive crowd came out to see him. So my first question, Phoenix, is, did you know, or did Peter Obi know he was this popular in Edo State? And how did he get this popular? So this is sort of a two-part question, Felix.
Well, did I know? I had an inkling. Did Peter Obi know? I don't think he had an idea, but I don't think he knew he was this popular. If we all remember, even the governor of Edo State had told us at one point that almost everybody around him or the people that he had been speaking to were claiming to be obedient. And we have seen people in Edo State, across the state, Benin, in Auchi, in different parts of the state, you know, go out on these marches and all of that. But I think nobody was prepared just the fact that he was there, because, you know, all of these marches, he's never been there. It was just spontaneous people organizing themselves and going out and doing all of this stuff. But I think because he was there, you could see the real weight of the support of the people of Edo State, notwithstanding, of course, the attempts by the governor and his people to deny him of a venue to have a rally with his people. He then turned to, you know, a show of force on the streets in three different cities, towns. I mean, I believe he went to Auchi, he was in Uromi, and of course in Benin, such that even the Oba himself, you know, talked about the obedience and the prevalence of obedience, and, you know, snickered at those who always talk about four people tweeting in the room. So I think, people who have been following the movement and following Peter Obi for a while would know that, yes, we have seen in Edo State that, yes, there is a connection with Peter Obi's candidacy, but I don't think anyone knew that it was to this extent. And that only portends real good omens for the campaign, because this is contagious, because this inspires other people. We know that, I mean, there's widespread support among the youth. And so this just continues to grow, and we'll see what's going to happen. I hear he's going to be in Port Harcourt or let's say in River State this week to commission something. Let's see what happens. But I mean, the showing in Edo State was definitely out of this world.
Thank you, Phoenix. Saliu, the Edo State used to be a very competitive state for the APC. You've produced Oshiomhole as governor, and then that's Adams Oshiomhole. You produced him as governor. You then produced Godwin Obaseki for his first term as governor. So it's a competitive state. It historically has been a competitive state for your party. So are you worried that you are going to lose the state to Obi, Salihu, given the numbers that came out to support him?
Michael, the way you wish out these numbers, the whole numbers that you see on Twitter and wherever it is, they are not more than 5,000 people. We tell these people every day when they do these whole walks and wherever it is, these people are not more than, they are not more than the polling unit in front of my grandfather's house. But now moving forward to that state called Edo State, are we worried? Why should we be worried? Even if we don't win the state, it doesn't matter. All we need is the 25%. And with even Edo State, we're going to even get as much as 40-45%. APC lost Edo State in the last election. They have even now a sitting governor that is PDP, who we know is behind the scene bankrolling and the Labour Party. He's not in good books with the other governors of the PDP. So we know what he's doing. So it's not even about a show of love for Peter Obi. Peter Obi should be very, very happy that the governor of Edo State is bankrolling some of his grassroots activities in Edo State. But we're not worried. Even if we don't win Edo State, it's okay. Oshiomhole is there. They will deliver the north of Edo State for us. He's going to win his senatorial seat, and we'll get about 45% in Edo State. So it's not even a worry for us at all.
I'm sorry, we just wanted to get. So do you have proof that Obaseki is funding Peter Obi's campaign in Edo State? Is there proof of this?
Politically, there is proof. Politically, it's been said. It's been discussed everywhere. It's not something new. Maybe you're hearing it for the first time, Michael, which is okay. But maybe if you're in Edo State, you would have had a better story about it. That's why the governor could, in earlier on, even talk about the obedient movement, because he has a problem. The governor of Edo State is not in charge of the PDP structures in his own state. And that's not new news. And in order to deal with that, he is now bankrolling what? An alternative, which is the Labour Party. So it's not a new news that we know that Obaseki is not in charge of PDP in Edo State. Everyone knows this. So it's politically, it's been discussed. Is there evidence? No, because it's politics. You snitch to win. You win to snitch. There's no permanent friend, no permanent enemy. The game is the game.
Thank you, Salihu. Eloka, you are a prominent, you are one of the supporters of Peter Obi. Salihu is telling us that Obaseki is funding your candidate in Edo State, and that this is common news to people who have their ears to the ground. Are you aware of this, Eloka?
Well, I mean, this is there are too many political conspiracies around. You know, a lot of people are not able to decipher who Peter Obi's quiet man in Edo State is. So a lot of people are used to, if you have the support, it can never be organic. It has to be inorganic. So something is funding the support. So, I mean, we've heard political conspiracies like this. But you ask them, why didn't the same Obaseki release the stadium to Peter Obi, to the Labour Party, when it came to campaign in Edo State? And, you know, when you see those conspiracies and you question them, you test them, they all fall flat. And so I'm not aware that there's any backhand dealing between the Obaseki and Labour Party. You know, what we do know is that there seems to be a massive organic support for Peter Obi in Edo State. For me, we've had this conversation before. I don't know why. I don't know how. And you guys recall, early in the year when Peter Obi left the PDP and they came to the Labour Party, and a lot of people were saying, he has killed his career, he has done this. Right there in Edo State, I think it was Uselo or Romi, somewhere organic, but one of those areas, there was a lady that said, we don't care where Peter Obi they go. Wherever they go, we go follow him. And she gave Labour Party in our local government, our office to do campaigns. And people were asking, Edo State, Peter Obi. I mean, the convergence was, the convergence of the support was, I mean, what's happening here? You know, so there are some things that happen you can't really explain. Me, I don't know why someone from Edo State is supporting Peter Obi as an Igbo man. Because a lot of people have tried to use the old wounds of the Civil War and everything to say, no, don't support him. You know how they invaded, I mean. But still, despite those stirring up old wounds, Edo State people have stood firm with him. And I'm to be honest, I'm very grateful. I have not seen, not in my political journey, have I seen a presidential candidate under one day campaign in three senatorial districts of the state. I mean, I stand to be corrected, I've not seen it. He was, we don't know Edo South, Edo Center. He tried as much as possible to meet all the traditional leaders in each community, in each senatorial zone he went to. He went to the altar of Urumi, I believe. And he was at the Oba's Palace. And he spoke consistency. His message in Urumi was consistent. The message in Benin was consistent. And the people of Benin came out en masse to show support for someone they believe in. You know, I keep on telling you that we're going to see, I mean, people have always tried to decipher and dissect and say, where are these voters? Who are these guys supporting Obi? Is it a social media support? I couldn't say, they're up to 5,000. Yeah, it's possible. But 2023 is going to test everything we've all said. Do we still need strongman politics? Do we still need, who is the point man giving money? Or will the people stand up and say, we the people decide who will become our president? No longer one strong man Uromi, or one strong man Egenebode, or one strong man Uselu, or one strong man in GRE Benin. We the people will decide this is who we will stand for, this is who we will vote for. And on the election day, you will mobilize, the people will mobilize, the way they mobilize themselves to come out to show support to Peter Obi, they will mobilize themselves and come out en masse. In fact, I just say that in 2023, Edo State, it is easier for Peter Obi to win Edo State than to win Ebonyi State. Because the ginger in Edo State is bigger than the ginger in the whole of the Southeast States. I'm not sure, I cannot tell you that Southeasterners will come out and match like this to show support for Kitobi. You know, people are like, because there's a lot of doubt. In fact, a very good friend of mine who's from Ekoma, before I said I'm going to support Kitobi, I'm like, well, what did it happen? Why are you not supporting? You know, go win. No, you go win. This friend of mine, he's the first person to tell me that, see what's happening in Edo State, though. His own mother, she's not Igbo, she's what? Ishan. Sorry, Esan, let me call it. That's her, his mother, who is retired. She goes to their village every day. She buys labor apron. She shares to Marcus. I said, why is your mother doing this? And her mother said, because out of all the presidential candidates, only Peter Obi they see. This is before the noise on social media came up. Constantly was telling me this is what's happening. I said, why? What did it happen for you? Why? I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it is grace or whether truly there's someone behind you back doors, but there is a massive, massive organic support for it, for Peter Obi in Edo State. And we are grateful because at the end of the day, you ask yourself, does he deserve it? You know? And so, we're trying to build a call. We're trying to build a following. The movement is growing. You're going to see this support all across Nigeria, even in the North. People say, Peter Obi isn't going to do anything in the North. It will shock them that the same message is passing across to Nigerians, that people will not believe it because the APC and PDP have failed them. There's really nothing they can put their legs on and say, okay, this is what we did. This for the not supporting the APC, this is what they benefited. No. So, I mean, P2B is the real cross-generational candidate. He's a real pan-Nigerian candidate. It's clear that he supports outside his home state, his home region of the Southeast, is high. The support outside his home is higher than the support in his home region of the Southeast. That is why we believe in Peter Obi, because he's been able to speak to people across the length and breadth of Nigeria. And we believe that come 2023, Nigerians will mobilize themselves. The people, not a ruling elite, a political elite, the military elite, the business class, the people will do what needs to be done and for once elect someone who the people have chosen. Thank you.
Thank you, Eloka. Let me give the final question to Phoenix on this topic. Phoenix, the PDP was banking on Edo State as part of one of the key states that Atiku needs to win in his southern strategy. In your view, do you think the PDP can win it now? Salihu has already said that APC is only looking for 25%, so they don't really care that way. But do you think the PDP can take the state, Phoenix?
No, I don't think so. I don't see how they take Edo State. The Edo people are known for voting for candidates they connect with. And that's why, as you said earlier, they had PDP governors, then they switched to APC, then they voted in a governor who was APC, and then when that governor pushed back against the godfather that thought that he put him there and switched parties, they voted for him again. So for them, it's not about party, it's about, do we connect with this candidate? And clearly we saw it. They connect with Peter Obi, and so I don't see how PDP, comes in and wins that state. I think this is one state that PDP, like APC, will be trying to make sure that at least they get their 25% if they can, and hold on to that, which is why, of course, my friend Sally was joking when he said he thinks APC will get 25% or even more. It's a joke. So for me, Edo State, again, to the points that Eluka has made, the Peter Obi Labour Party campaign cannot afford to be complacent. I've said this repeatedly. I see a clear path to victory for him, but it rests on massive turnout. Massive turnout, not the 28, 29, 30% we've been seeing before. It needs to be north of 40%. And if that happens, then for me, it's, I mean, game over. So people should not rest on their oars and say, oh, Edo State is in the bag. It's not in the bag. The people's support is clear. And I believe strongly that he will take Edo State. But they need to keep pushing. They need to keep pushing because in places where he's strong, they need to push for like 90%. You know, push as hard as you can and then bring out that turnout and then make sure that, you know, you counter whatever might happen in other areas where you're not as strong. But, I mean, clearly, I mean, he is the front runner in Edo State. And then we continue to see that work across the South-South, the Southeast, and, you know, make have a strong showing in the Southwest. I also strongly believe there'll be a strong showing in the North Central. And that's the path to victory with obviously picking up some votes in the North, Northwest and Northeast as well.
Thank you, Phoenix. Anyway, the elections are coming up, so we'll be able to put all these ideas to the test. We'll see if this high turnout brings the result you claim it will bring. But our time is up. So first of all, I must thank our two guests, Eluka and Salihu, for taking time out of their busy schedules to be here. Thank you, Phoenix, for co-hosting. And last but not least, thank you to our listeners for always being loyal and giving us helpful feedback. So until same time next week, I say have a fantastic 7 days to everyone.
Thanks, Michael, and thanks, Eluka and Salihu, for joining us. Thanks, listeners, and have a great week.